Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
I mean, the point of education is to really be seekers of the truth, whatever the truth may be. And that's what all standards, in my opinion, should work towards that end. You know, once upon a time, people said the earth was flat and it couldn't possibly be round. You know, I don't know.
The council still has to formally call the election within 20 days, but the next available date for the election would be in November. So we expect it to be on the general election ballot on November 6th.
We're thrilled by the unanimous vote, and we look forward to making this the most fan-friendly Super Bowl in the history of Super Bowls, and bigger and better than any Super Bowl.
I want to thank all the people that signed the petitions. Actually, it's almost double of what you need to get on a ballot. So we went through that hurdle. I'm a viable candidate. I expect to win. Looking forward to taking on Congresswoman Sinema in the general election.
And with us to talk about Uber's autonomous vehicles leaving Arizona, Joe Arpaio turning in his Senate signatures and other items, are Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground, and attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us. It's our pleasure.
So Chuck, Uber, driving out of Arizona, there have been a lot of issues related to that. Mark had a chance to talk with Governor Ducey a little bit about it. What do you think ultimately about this? I mean, there's still Waymo. There are still other options out there. But what is this? Does this illustrate anything wrong about how Governor Ducey handled Arizona's open for business?
Yeah, I think they were surprised by the severity and the quickness of the governor's response to the incident in Tempe when he pulled everybody off the road right away. And I think they're sending a message back going, hey, if that's the way we're going to be treated, we really don't want to be here. Although, as you've pointed out, Mark, Waymo's still here, and Waymo's testing in the very same areas that Uber was. And so he can still claim that, hey, we're going to be a driverless. He can still claim that.
Roy, what are your thoughts on that generally?
Well, I think it does say something about the governor's philosophy, this idea that he goes to companies in other states and says, hey, come to Arizona. There's not going to be any regulation whatsoever, and you can sort of do what you wish. And I think, you know, this example, this tragedy that occurred with Uber is another example of a company coming in here with unproven technology and essentially experimenting on Arizonans. We saw that with Theranos. We see this now with Uber. And so I think it does say something that, you know, it took essentially a tragedy like this to occur for us to say, okay, this technology may not be safe for Arizonans.
Well, what's interesting, and Governor Ducey said this to Mark, is that he's concerned most about the safety of our citizens. And I think probably in his heart of hearts that's true, but when you look at practicality, maybe not as much?
Well, exactly. I mean, we see now from this report that's been issued about the crash that the technology has had trouble detecting objects, which is what happened here. We saw that the automatic braking system in the car was disabled. So, you know, even the driver couldn't really do anything about, you know, hitting the person. I mean, these are scary things when you have these cars driving around, you know, and potentially hitting people. And so the question I think becomes, you know, how do we regulate these companies so that these kinds of things don't happen again?
I think the other thing that he was reacting, though, to was the play out on the driver, you know, had methamphetamine in her system and had other, you know, not at the time intoxicated, but that didn't speak well for Uber and the vetting of their driver population out here. And so I don't think they wanted to have this narrative go on either. As we all recall, I think they settled the lawsuit with the victim's family like in a heartbeat. I think they made a path out of here intentionally to get away from this story.
Chuck, do you think that the way this all went down affects Arizona's ability to sort of sell itself as a place for innovative ideas and entrepreneurs and, to Roy's point, in some cases, some untested technology?
No, I don't think so. I think the governor owns that piece of the landscape. How he reacted to this was troublesome, as we've discussed. But he's open for business. I know of other companies that are looking at the Valley and looking at the entrepreneurial opportunities out here. And he's going to own that piece of the turf, I think.
What do you think, Roy?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a way to be open for business, I think, you know, to allow companies to come in. We want companies to come into Arizona, but at the same time, you can't, you know, make promises to them that they're not going to be regulated and have them come in and not be regulated. I mean, that's a real problem, especially when it could potentially hurt people.
So how do you sort of reconcile that? Because one of the things that it seems like Arizona is selling itself as is that you can come here and test things out. So how do you sort of try to regulate those kinds of things without being maybe too heavy-handed and making companies not want to come here because they can get the same kind of regulation elsewhere?
Well, it's a delicate balance. I mean, obviously, you don't want to over-regulate a company because that potentially hurts that production of, you know, what they're doing. But at the same time, again, you know, like in this instance, we have a report after the crash. But I am sure, well, at least I would suspect, that if you look back at the testing of Uber vehicles here in Arizona, there's probably been other incidents that the public isn't aware of where, again, the technology failed.
Chuck, how important a business is this potentially for Arizona? I mean, is this potentially because of the innovation and whatnot, it could turn into something pretty important? Or is this something because of the tragic accident that happened, we're focused on it more than we should?
As media always does. I mean,
come on, man.
Yeah. I mean, we're caught in this little news cycle right now. We're talking about this because of the NTSB report this week. But the reality is this is happening all over the place. As Roy pointed out, there's technology changes. Bird scooters are in Scottsdale now. They're in Tempe. You know, they're out there. Client, just to be clear, but you know, there's all kinds of revolutions taking place in transportation and how people get there and how people travel in dense urban environments. Parking is going to be changing. Everybody sees that coming. The governor sees that coming. The airport put out all of its parking for bid recently because they see it coming. So it's a change that's taken place, and I think the state's well positioned to navigate and will continue to be in a good position to do that.
The only thing I'd add to that, though, is that I don't think bird scooters are going to be hitting anyone and killing anyone. I mean, there, again, are things, you know, that we, I think, have to regulate. You know, I bring up the Theranos example earlier. I mean, again, this is technology that's supposed to sort of help people diagnose their illnesses. The technology doesn't work. People are misdiagnosed, and that actually ends up hurting people's health.
Chuck, given the governor's sort of on-again, off-again feud with our neighbors to the west, does it matter at all, do you think, to either to him or to the state that Uber is talking about going, just taking everything back to California now from whence it came?
No, because you're going to have Waymo. I mean, Waymo's going to be out here, too. You know, and I think there's going to be competition in that field, and I think he knows that. And if they want to go back to the heavily regulated environment of California, be my guest. I mean, it is a very different regulatory atmosphere in California than what we have here, and a very different tax structure as well.
Roy, let's move on to the U.S. Senate race, the GOP side in Arizona. Joe Arpaio turned in his petition signatures this week and did not necessarily impress a lot of people with his great knowledge of what it might take to be a senator. He said something about how he hasn't had time to study. As a Democrat yourself, are you really, really pleased by the possibility that Joe Arpaio could win? Do you think it's a possibility he could win that nomination?
Well, to the first question, absolutely. I'm a Democrat. I'm a strong supporter of Congresswoman Sinema. I think the idea of having Arpaio as the Republican nominee is a great thing for Congresswoman Sinema and for Democrats. I mean, we're talking about somebody who was soundly rejected in 2016 in Maricopa County when he ran for reelection. You know, having him at the top of the ticket, if you will, statewide would be wonderful for Democrats. You know, the second question, whether he can actually get through the primary, I mean, I think conventional wisdom will say that it's going to be Congresswoman McSally. But at the same time, I mean, you've got three candidates that, in my view, are sort of racing to the bottom when it comes to rhetoric about immigration and other things. And so who knows really what ends up happening there?
Chuck, what about the Kelly Ward situation? We'd heard that some Representative Kelly Ward's campaign tried to get the sheriff to maybe do something else. What does that indicate to you?
That they understand the fundamentals of Republican politics, that there's only room for one one really ultra-conservative candidate in the race. Joe occupies that space by virtue of his name ID in Maricopa County alone, and he is a spoiler. I think he's always been a spoiler in this race. I've said it from the beginning. I think he knew that. I think his people knew that. I think he's there to make sure Ms. Ward doesn't succeed and that McSally has a path to the election. Roy and I were talking about off air was how surprised I am at that she, Congressman McSally, continues to tack into places where I think makes her more vulnerable in the general election. I have data that shows that Republicans in Arizona support forms of comprehensive immigration reform, a majority of Republicans. You have a governor that's talked about trade and commerce with Mexico and how important that is. And she seems to continue to go places, which is a mystery to me. I don't quite understand why she's doing what she's doing.
Well, that kind of leads into my next question, which is even if Arpaio is, in fact, a spoiler in the end, how much of an impact might he have not just on the GOP primary, but how whoever emerges from that is able to compete in the general election.
Yeah, I mean, that's a question in this cycle as well. The you'd call it the Trump Arpaio hangover effect of and we've seen it in we're talking off the air about in District 8 up there. They're in the congressional race. The Democrats and overperformed by a couple points, but importantly, there were Republicans that walked away from the ticket. And you know, you're 35 to 55 school age, you know, people with kids at home. Walked away from the Republican ticket up there. That's why, you know, she only won by 5% in that election. And so if those matrices continue, if those numbers continue to play out, it would suggest that this is going to be a very difficult seat for McSally to win if she's the nominee.
Roy, I want to give you a chance to jump in, but one more quick thing with Chuck. Was Arpaio's performance this week simply embarrassing for a Senate candidate?
I think his performance has been routinely embarrassing whenever he has to ask any type of substantive questions. He's sitting in his house in Fountain Hills. Chad's running his campaign. Chad's collecting the checks. There isn't any debate. He's not out there talking about issues. He's not working precinct committee. He's 80 some years old, and he's beyond overtime. Mm-hmm.
Roy, how strong is Sinema at this point? Her ads are everywhere. She's raised a tremendous amount of money. But is name recognition still an issue, considering she has just been a representative?
Well, you know, I think we're still early on in the campaign, right? I mean, at the end of the day, there's not, you know, a ton of attention yet from the sort of average voter in Arizona. I think, you know, that the fact that she's on the air now is an effort to remedy that, right, so that her name recognition goes up. I mean, she's a tremendous politician, and, you know, I think that she's playing this campaign perfectly and watching sort of the Republicans, as I mentioned earlier, sort of race to the bottom. I mean, the idea originally was that McSally was going to be the moderate Republican, but because she's had to tack so far to the right to match Arpaio and Ward, she's going to come out of this primary looking pretty extreme, and Congresswoman Sinema is going to be sort of the moderate middle, and I think that's where you need to be to win in Arizona statewide.
Final thoughts before the break.
Yeah, it's a replay of how Dennis DeConcini won the race way back in the day. I know that's going back into the Wayback Machine, but he had a Republican knockdown drag out, which essentially is what we're having here. And the county prosecutor from Pima County becomes the next U.S. Senator. I think we're going to see that again.
That's right. Chuck Coughlin. Also here is Roy Herrera. It's the Friday Newscap with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. More to come after this. Good morning. It's the Friday Newscap here on the show on 91.5 KJZZ in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're joined this morning by Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground, and attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera.
Guys, this week, Phoenix Mayor Greg Stanton presided over his last official city council meeting when they approved the new budget. He announced that he'll be resigning next week, just a few days before the deadline for his run for Congress. I want to ask each of you about sort of how his tenure as Phoenix mayor will play in that congressional race. His campaign is clearly touting it. They've sent out emails. We've also seen emails from foes of his, most notably council member Sal DeCicco, talking about what a disaster Stanton's tenure as mayor was. Chuck, I mean, is this the kind of thing where with any politician who's been in office, their record can be a blessing and a curse?
Well, let's think about the district that he's running in. It's District 9, which is pretty much a good chunk of the wealthier parts of Phoenix, North Central Phoenix, Arcadia, fairly well-to-do zip codes, all the way down to Tempe, University Town, and into Ahwatukee as well, which is a fairly affluent part. The mayor has tremendous name ID. He is well-regarded in that district. It can run on his record in that district. Is Sal's criticism? There are things that Sal says that do have credibility. He just says so many things that they diminish the amount of credibility he has. There is a legitimate issue on public safety in Phoenix. And the allocation of resources to public safety and the staffing levels that the city has right now. But by and large, people look at the city as being well run, and they like their city. Their garbage gets picked up on time. The water is okay. You know, the roads are pretty good. The police and fire show up when you call them most of the time, and things are pretty good. And all of the data suggests that we see is that the people regard the city well. And so I think in this district, the mayor is very safe on running on his record.
Roy, do you agree with that?
I totally agree with that. I think that the mayor is to be commended, in my view, for his tenure in Phoenix. I think he did a lot of great things in Phoenix when it comes to revitalizing the downtown area with ASU and the light rail, when it comes to attracting businesses, and like we talked about earlier, that's happening in Phoenix. And so I think he can run on that record, especially in that district, as Chuck said, which I think is sort of well-suited for what kind of politician he is.
What are his strengths as a candidate? Obviously, we talked about the record, and that's fine. He is very energetic. He seems like he would be a good campaigner, but he hasn't been tested in quite this way. What are you looking for to see, regardless of the competition, whether he is actually a good candidate with some staying power?
Well, you know, running for mayor is a different thing than running for Congress, right? I mean, there's all kinds of issues at the federal level you're going to have to deal with that he's going to have to, you know, demonstrate, and I think he will demonstrate, you know, expertise in and you know, good positioning on. And so that's, you know, that's a change. Obviously, raising money is a sort of a different animal at the federal level, which he's going to, you know, have to do. But I think he's a talented politician. He does have a lot of energy. He's a great communicator in a lot of ways. And again, for that district in particular, I think it really fits him well. I mean, this is the district that Congresswoman Sinema has right now. I think that Mayor Stanton is sort of a natural sort of successor to that.
Yeah, the district itself is a Democratic district. It was written by the Redistricting Commission as a swing district. Clinton beat Trump by 13 points in that district. The only Republican ever to win in that district was McCain when he ran two cycles ago. And so it Goddard beat Brewer, Fred beat the Governor Ducey in that district. It's a Democratic district that is, as Roy said, is well-positioned for this mayor to occupy, as Kirsten has for some time to come.
So is that why we're not seeing what we'd call name candidates running on the GOP side?
Yep, okay. That's exactly right. I mean, Dr. Ferrara is a very has a great bio. He is a physician, combat experience, a veteran. He's raised a good deal of money. It's just a very uphill climb in that district for a Republican. You almost have to fumble. I mean, the Democrats almost have to fumble and give it away with a scandal or something of that nature. And this Mayor Stanton has navigated away from those scandals very well.
How significant do either of you think the pending shakeup on the city council will be? Stanton will be leaving next week. A couple other members have talked about resigning to run for mayor. You could potentially have a bunch of new faces on that council.
It's a three-ring circus. The circus opens up the day after Memorial Day. You're going to have Councilman Valenzuela resigning. You'll have Councilwoman Gallego resigning. Then you'll have appointment processes for those replacements. You'll have the council voting on a new interim mayor, which is suspected to be Councilwoman Thelda Williams, who's a lovely lady and actually was mayor before. And is a very stabilizing force, which is the one really good thing that's happening. But it is going to be, you know, and then you're going to have the election going on through the November cycle, and then you'll have a runoff in March. And so it's going to be a show.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be tremendous turnover on the council. I mean, as Chuck said, you've got a couple of council members that are going to be running. In the interest of full disclosure, I'm working for and backing Councilman Valenzuela. I think he's the right person to move the city forward in this election. But, you know, because of that, we're going to have this appointment process. It's going to be very interesting to see who the remaining council members actually appoint. And then, of course, like Chuck said, we have the actual election and potential runoffs. And also, depending on when the council members resign, we don't know exactly when those races are going to be. I mean, it may be at the same time. It may not be at the same time. So, you know, tremendous turnover and new people, I think, at the council could change things.
Yeah, which is troubling for the city. I mean, for the manager, Mr. Zerker, and his team, you know, you want a stable political environment, particularly, you know, we're in the nation's fifth largest city. And for the time being, the manager is going to be running the city, with Councilman Williams being the acting mayor, presumably. And so it'll be, let's all just say, let's hope for calmness and serenity for several months here while this political circus plays itself out and we can get a council and a mayor and get that settled.
And I think we'll have that. I mean, there's some quality people running and seeking the appointment in these districts that, you know, hopefully end up winning and the, you know, the city continues its progress as it's been, you know, been doing under Mayor Stanton.
Any fun names, any former mayors, I don't know, Gordon Rimza, anybody like that want to be appointed?
No. Paul Johnson's son, Justin Johnson, I think is going to be working to succeed Councilman Valenzuela in that district. There's some other well-regarded Hispanics that are running. I think we'll probably see Michael Johnson run again in that southern district against other African Americans, and so we'll see. You'll see some familiar names, and you'll see some new faces too.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to the new faces. I think. I mean, you know, I want to see some people, you know, lead in Arizona and in Phoenix that are new, and so I think in both districts you're going to see that. But with, you know, Mayor Gordon, you never know what he's going to do, right? So who knows? he can run for anything.
And Roy, finally, our last couple minutes, Super Bowl 57 in 2023, coming back to Arizona. Obviously, it's a celebratory occasion because we're going to get a lot more people coming here. How big a deal is it that Arizona continues to be in the rotation for this?
Well, I mean, it's a big deal. You know, there's, I guess, some question about how great the economic impact is of Super Bowls, but, you know, it has some economic impact, so I think that's a good thing. You know, showing off Arizona, showing off Phoenix is, you know, to the nation, I think is always a good thing. I'm a big NFL fan, so, you know, hopefully the Cardinals are in that Super Bowl with a five-time Pro Bowler, Josh Rosen. We'll see. But I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, I think it's a good thing that we continue to be viewed like other major cities like Miami, New Orleans, New York, as a place, a destination where you can have big events.
Well, Michael Bidwell and his family, when they promised and made the commitment to put the new stadium on the map and do that, they promised that we'd be in the Super Bowl rotation. We are in the Super Bowl rotation. People love coming here. And we have the greatest hospitality industry in the state that are in the country, I think. When you come out here and you can enjoy this climate, they'll always give them to new teams like in Detroit or, you know, somebody builds a new, but they're going to be coming back here every 3 to 4 years. I'm really happy about that.
You sure he didn't promise to be in the Super Bowl as opposed to the Super Bowl rotation?
I think he would love to be in the Super Bowl, as Roy said, with the chosen Rosen being the leader of the pack. I think it's their family promised we'd be in the rotation, and they've delivered.
That is Chuck Coughlin, president of High Ground. And also joining us was attorney and former congressional staffer Roy Herrera. Guys, thanks very much. Enjoy the long weekend. We appreciate it.
Happy holidays.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.